Good morning, everybody, and many thanks to the organizers of this session specifically, as well as the organizers of the different sections responsible for the organization of the session. What I want to present here is not, like the first presentation, any research project, but it's to raise an important question for us, particularly in the developing countries, around the issue of funding for the development of occupational health. And firstly, to declare that I have no conflicts of interest. And as I said, occupational health development aid has been occurring in Southern Africa for a considerable period of time. However, what's not clear to us is how the agenda and the objectives of these funding programs are decided, and to what extent these programs actually contribute to sustainable development in occupational health. I'm going to speak basically about my experiences in the various programs that I've worked in Southern Africa, focusing on the 14 countries that make up the Southern African Development Community. Essentially, the economic driver in this region is South Africa, and I'll produce some information about the economic data for that country in a short while. So just some background on Southern Africa. It has a population of 200 million, and of the economically active population, 60 to 80% of them are located in the informal sector. Injury rates of 6 per 1,000 workers, with fatality and disease rates of about 14 per 100,000 workers. Interestingly, according to the World Health Organization, these figures are considerably underestimated by up to 50 times. The extent of the problem for occupational health in the region is further emphasized when one looks at the extent to which workers have access to health services. South Africa, which is probably the country with the most advanced infrastructure in occupational health, has less than 20% of workplaces providing health services for workers. Also, South Africa has contributed considerably to the overall burden of occupational diseases in the region, particularly through its historical mining resources. A large number of workers from the neighboring countries constituted the migrant labor force for South Africa, and currently these workers exhibit extremely high levels of respiratory diseases particularly. Studies have shown between 22 to 36% of ex-mine workers have occupational respiratory diseases. The World Health Organization has estimated that the region contributes 10% of the occupational burden of disease. It's also been estimated that injury and illness accounts for 3% of the region's GDP. So Southern Africa is not a particularly large economy. The current gross domestic product of the region is around about 374 billion. As I indicated, the main driver for the economic progress in the region is South Africa, which accounts for 70% of the total GDP. However, the region is extremely dependent on aid. In 1999, these were the best data that I was able to obtain. In 1999, it received $20 per capita in aid, and external debt stood at around about $70 billion in 2001. Very importantly, some countries are really swallowed in debt, with ranges of 110 to 173% of their GDP. So given this situation, it's clear the region is dependent on aid, and dependent on aid for some specific issues. And occupational health is by no means the least of them. So while public funding for occupational health services comes from social security and tax sources, funding for programs such as human resource development, research, or expansion into new areas, such as the informal sector, is largely dependent on international agencies. The funding for development aid in Southern Africa comes from a number of different agencies, and some of these are listed here. Some of these tend to work throughout the region, such as the Fogarty International Center and the US National Institutes of Health, and up to very recently, the Swedish International Development Agency. Others choose to work in some specific countries as indicated on this map. What is important, however, is that while these agencies provide aid, it is not clear how the objectives for these programs are decided. We do know that these different agencies determine the objectives without the beneficiary input to a large extent. What decides the way that the objectives are decided by the donor agencies? Clearly, there must be some overall political involvement. There's no reason, why would, for example, the Swedes decide to fund occupational health development in Southern Africa without there being direct impact in the Swedish economy or in Sweden in general or any of the other countries? So there is some issues around the political agenda. But by and large, the beneficiaries expected to develop programs in keeping with the original objectives of the donor agencies. While there are definitely short-term impacts, and this has been evident in the programs that we've run in Southern Africa, it is not clear how these short-term impacts contribute to long-term sustainable occupational health development. So as I indicated, there is generally little in-country stakeholder consultation. In addition, the implementation of these programs are also problematic. Essentially, the agencies that are responsible for implementing these programs are dependent on identification of stakeholders in the region. But because both for the determination of the objectives and for the determination of implementation, there is a lack of serious coordinating entities within the region, donor agencies and partner organizations largely determine these approaches themselves. And this quite obviously is problematic for the long-term sustainability of projects. In 2005, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development convened an international conference in Paris, and the end of the conference produced the Paris Declaration on Aid Effectiveness, the so-called Paris Agenda. And essentially, the intention was, because of the increasing globalization of government aid, it was necessary to set up a new international framework to decide how funding was going to occur in the different countries. And essentially, the objectives of this Paris agenda was to better manage the process of providing aid, ensure alignment with national development strategies, and to encourage beneficiary control. Has this occurred? The critics of the Paris Declaration feel otherwise. They believe that essentially the Paris Declaration replaces the failed structural adjustment programs of the 1990s established by the International Monetary Fund as well as the World Bank. And some of the reasons for their concerns is that despite the claim that there's partnership and in the development aid agenda, there still remains lack of community consultation. There is still considerable donor-imposed conditions on funding. One study essentially identified 82 governance-related conditions for the recipients of funds. The OECD itself believes that the Paris agenda has not been achieved, and there's still considerable fragmentation in aid. For example, eight sub-Saharan countries have received between 15 to 20 donor organizations contributing less than 10% of the country's aid. So it's evident that the Paris agenda is not working in terms of the distribution of aid. But the other issue with the Paris Declaration, although the intention was to limit the overlapping of funding for similar development projects, it's not clear the themes, who's responsible for the various themes, who's responsible for the various projects that have to be funded. For example, it's not clear who's responsible for occupational health. And an example of this has been the early termination of fairly large programs that have taken place in developing countries. In Central America and Southern Africa, two long-term programs that were supposed to last for over a 12-year period was cut short early before the end of 4 years because These programs were funded by the Swedish International Development Agency, and largely they were cut because of Sweden's realignment of development aid. So clearly that the development aid is essentially based on the individual missions of the different agencies responsible, and this forms the basis for the funding programs. But at the same time, organizations that are responsible for implementing these programs in the developing countries need to indicate individual success to their funders. And basically, the partner agencies and the implementing agencies need to show these in order to have continued sources of funding. But because of these problems, because of the insistence on showing short-term gains, the long-term infrastructural development has a much lower priority. So clearly, the intentions of the Paris Declaration have not been met. It's if we're going to address development funding in occupational health, it requires long-term commitment to achieve meaningful impacts. So what are the challenges facing us? What are the tasks that we need to do? Essentially, we need to find sustainable sources of funding. We need to look at ways in which we can ensure there is money coming in and in which is going to contribute to the development, the long-term development and sustainability of occupational health. And for occupational health in particular, this is possible. There are essentially within the regions themselves, we should be able to identify resources from finance and economic activities that will contribute to occupational health development. In addition, we need to promote fair trade and not aid as a slogan. Essentially, we need to make sure that we have constant capital inflow into the region and being able to harness some of these resources for the promotion of occupational health. In Abuja, Nigeria, the leaders of the African countries decided that 15% of national fiscus needs to be devoted to health. This presents also an opportunity for us to harness resources for occupational health. To date, there's been very little serious evaluation of the success of the programs for development in occupational health. As I indicated, there's been clearly short-term impacts, and these have been shown to have been successful. But what does this mean for long-term development? For example, with the short-term programs, we focused on the number of trained individuals. We're not interested in developmental endpoints. In other words, we're not looking at how has this improved service delivery? How has this contributed to the reduction in disease prevalence? And unless we turn our focus and we evaluate programs on these endpoints, we're going to be continually looking at short-term inputs. One of the major problems that are facing us in terms of the volatility of funding, in terms of us being able to direct the way development aid is used for occupational health, has been the lack of a clear organizational infrastructure to direct these resources. So basically what we need is we need organizational infrastructure development, which can focus itself on how planning and resource allocation takes place. For external funders and external partners, we need funding for longer term capacity development. We need to ensure that there is accountability and that we have objectives that are set through consultation. And as I indicated, unless we have regional structures for the successful implementation of the program, structures that are able to negotiate their own self-interest, that have clear self-determination, and have the capacity for strategic assessment, and put into place mechanisms for multinational participation, ensuring predictability of funding, we're not going to achieve the goals. It's always going to be a relationship which is dependent on the donor agencies and the donor funders. I'd like to just acknowledge that this was an input that was appeared in the Equinet News, which is a newsletter of the Network for Equity in Health in Southern Africa. And I'd like to express my thanks to Renee Lowenson, who's the editor for this, for her contribution. Thank you.